it on naturalfarminghawaii.net later if you want to listen to it. I'll also put the slides up there so you can listen to both and look at the slides at the same time and remember the funny jokes that I told tonight. And they'll be, you know, just repeated. You're like, oh, that was funny. So I tonight want to talk about soil foundation, and I hope this is applicable to people that are very experienced in natural farming and also people that are new to natural farming. I know I can, just by facial recognition, I know a few people are new tonight. So if I go over something and you don't understand, don't worry. This talk goes through many layers and comes back to the same thing all the time. So just hold on to your questions till the end, and I will answer them then. And I can be reached at drake@naturalfarminghawaii.net. If you want to email me. One of the projects I'm going to follow tonight is this project here, which is part of the Let's Grow Hilo. This is in downtown Hilo. It's right in front of the Hawaiian Forest. We planted some kalo down there, and I'm just going to kind of follow that as my example today. And what I'm going to go over is the recipe on how, you know, what is the natural farming recipe to build soil foundation, then what's the natural farming method to deploy your soil foundation and build that in your soil so you do it properly. Then kind of the theory of soil foundation, like why are we doing all this work, what benefits do we get, what are the advantages to doing this. Then I'm going to go over the rationale for the components. Because this soil foundation is made up of many different components. Okay. Can everyone hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I won't use that then. So why I use the individual components, and understanding the individual components kind of gives you a little bit more of an understanding to be flexible with what you're doing, why you're adding certain things. When you see things in your environment, you can open up your feedback loop and know, oh, I need more of this because I see these results, or I need less of that. And so understanding the individual components that make up this soil foundation and why I use them. And then finally, I'm going to finish with just some insights and examples that I've collected from many different sources and just had some visual examples to kind of show you what a good soil foundation is. So without further ado, I'm going to start with the recipe, and this is super technical, and if you follow this exactly, you're probably going to be wrong, but you have to start somewhere, and this is the best place to start. This is kind of the shotgun approach if you were going to go to a place to build soil foundation and you weren't sure exactly what to do. Apply this recipe, and then as you start to incorporate this into your life, you can then fine-tune this to your needs. And so this is the recipe for 100 square feet of soil. Like, say, and 100 square feet is maybe two of these tables combined or so. It's not very big of an area. This can be scaled up, obviously, for quarter acre, acre increments if you need, but just multiply it by 10, I guess, something like that. But so the first component is 5 pounds of IMO, and this is IMO4 that's complete, that's cooled off, it's completely in its ready stage. You can also use IMO number 5, but I'll stick with 4 because it's real simple. I recommend you throw in 2 to 5 pounds of biochar into this. I'll talk about these individual components later, but it's really, biochar will add a lot. It'll add a multiplying effect to what you're doing here. Then there's 15 gallons of oxygenated water, which you can get this from a lot of different ways. The rain actually contains 8% oxygen, so just waiting for it to naturally rain or doing this while it's rainy, you can get that natural oxygenation. And then this over here, this 4 gallons of natural water, I was going to put, like, unchlorinated or, like, you know, like, but natural water just sounded to me to be the most encompassing. Just, you know, try not to get it from a spigot that has chlorine in it. Good natural rainwater or good rough water from a river or something, like, just good natural water. And then all of these components here at these different dilutions, that if you fill a 4-gallon bucket up with water, which is a 5-gallon bucket, excuse me, and you fill it to 4 gallons, it's those rings that go around the bucket. If you've ever used those classic, like, orange Home Depot buckets, you fill it to that line, and that's 4 gallons. And then when you fill it to 4 gallons, the conversions for these are really easy because you can do them in ounces. And these will end up at the correct dilutions here. You add 2 ounces of fermented plant juice, 1 ounce of the OHN, 1 ounce of the fish amino acid, 1 ounce of the brown rice vinegar, 1 ounce of the lactic acid bacteria, and 20 ounces of seawater. And all those are combined into that one tank of 4 gallons. So if that's clear, I got basically 1, 2, 3, 4 components here. And this one's a compilation of different things into that component. With those 4 things for the recipe, I'll move on to the method. And this is where it goes into building nice soil foundations. Is it on your, say you want to plant this area here, this table. First thing I would do is get rid of the grass. However you want to do that, that's up to you. I'm not going to really comment on that. There's more or less labor-intensive ways to do it. But once you have that and you have your area that you want to prep this soil now, on week 1, I'll come in with the IMO4 and the biochar mixed together, and I'll spread it real over the surface. And you'll get it. Sometimes the IMO will be clumpy. Try not to break the clumps smaller than like the tip of your thumb, like the size of a quarter. If it's already powdered, it's fine. But if you leave it kind of a little bit clumpier like that, the colony of microorganisms that are in that chunk tend to work better. Imagine you're with a group of friends, and then you know you're going to some place, and then you get separated from your friends right when you're put into the environment. You're probably not going to do as well as if you're in an aggregate with your friends in a group and you go into the environment. So the same thing with the microorganisms. If they already have an aggregate structure built, you kind of leave that as you put it out and distribute them. Then once you've spread that on your surface, you want to come and water it with your 4-gallon mixture. And the reason I separate the 4-gallon and the 15-gallon is because the 4-gallon has all those different components in it, and so you want to get a real homogeneous, even spreading of this liquid. So if you have a watering can with a big rose that's going to throw the water, the smaller the particulate size of this water, the better off you're going to be. The smaller, the microbes will metabolize it better and start to use it better when it's smaller. And so basically you just water it. Like if I spread on this table, I'd water it so I got a thin layer and everything, my entire watering can of 4 gallons is used up there. Then you want to come back and water with this oxygenated water. And the oxygenated water is really what kind of brings the soil alive. It's kind of the classic reason of why they used to till, because they thought, oh, we're going to get oxygen down into the soil. We're going to bring this all alive. Unfortunately, tilling does a lot more collateral damage than just going out with oxygenated water. If you've ever noticed when it's raining for many days, the plants look all right. But if you were to leave on your irrigation line and you put water out there that wasn't oxygenated, your plants would start to drown. They'd all start wilting and drowning. And it's this oxygenated water that really makes a huge difference to the plant, to getting this jump start going, to getting the plant to want to explore out into the soil and find where it needs to go. So on your first week, you do this. you spread the IMO, then you water it. Then on the second week, you just come back with the 4-gallon and 15-gallon mixture and redo the area. You just water it. And you want to, when you're putting the 15 gallons on, you really want to try to saturate your top 8 inches. So it's kind of like a deep watering, but because it's oxygenated, it's really good for the soil. And then if your soil's not that damaged, just week 1 and week 2 are sufficient, and you can skip to this one and plant at the end. But if your soil is really damaged, it helps to do 2 more additional weeks of just continuing to put the liquid. And what that's doing is the IMOs, your microbes are up there, but now you're encouraging them to go into the soil and bring your living soil alive. And that's why this is called soil foundation, because you're really building a foundation, something that's solid, something that's, you know, going to last here. And it's the oxygen that makes them go and explore to make that happen. And then typically at the end of week 4, if you were to go all 4 weeks, then you can sow your seeds or transplants at that time. And if you're following the natural farming methods, you will have a seed soak or a transplant soak solution made at that time to do your to charge up your plant before you put it in the soil. And because you've done that and you've also charged up the ground, it's basically like you put a bunch of energy into both things, and when you connect them, there's a lot of potential that is released, and it goes in kinetically, and the plant will seek out and find where it wants to go. So you don't want to irrigate it in these first 11 days, and you don't want to heap a bunch of nutrients right around your plant. You've been working on the soil foundation. You've been putting it out on your area, your 100 square feet. You've been getting it real nice. So don't come and dump a bunch of amendments right on your plant, because what you're trying to do at this stage when you plant it is you're trying to get the plant to go out for itself and to go find the nutrients. Because the soil's alive, because the system's working, it will. So that's the method of this. So I kind of, if that's clear, the recipe, the method, now I want to go into kind of the theory of why you would do soil foundation. And really, one of the crucial things in natural farming is to promote the root growth. That a lot of other types of farming that tend to be high nitrogenous types of farming really promote vegetable growth on the top, but not necessarily root growth, which from advanced root systems and really good root growth, that's where you get the nutrition, that's where your plant reaches its maximum natural potential by finding these things. And roots grow on oxygen. They breathe just like your lungs. They need oxygen. So the more you can get that aerobic zone out there, and get the oxygen, aerobic meaning full of oxygen zone, so your deep watering of that 8 inches with all that oxygenated water, the bigger you can get that zone, the more your roots are instantly going to want to go out there. Otherwise, they kind of have to wait for other systems to kind of line up and be in place before they can grow. With you setting up the soil foundation ahead of time, it's just like pristine go time as soon as you put your plant in the soil. And oxygen being crucial for early growth. The other reason for it is when you do soil foundation, you really promote aerobic microbes in the soil. The aerobic microbes are the good guys doing majority of symbiotic relationships with the plant. So by creating that oxygenated environment, you're putting those microbes out there, and they are beneficial to the point that as they live and they die, that just happens that natural cycle is exactly what the plant wanted to eat. And so when I say fertilizer on demand, what I mean by that is that the microbes, by putting them out, by bringing the soil alive, that they will their populations will manage themselves so that, it feeds the plant on demand. Like the plant has a signaling to it versus you going out and throwing a clump of fertilizer at some arbitrary time that you think the plant wants it. The microbes are able to the minuscule time and within, like an inch, release enough magnesium right in this inch layer where the plant needed it, and it can take it in the uptake. And so it's kind of like putting time-release fertilizer into your ground by building this soil foundation, because it will release itself and make the right nutrients available at the right time, given you've created a great soil foundation. If there's parts of your biology missing, it's going to be harder to get that time-release type of fertilizer. You're going to have to be more micromanaging. But if you get it set, you should just do it on demand. And the third point up here is kind of the little bit of theory of hard start with the plants, that by taking care of the microbes, that you can kind of leave the plant almost as secondary, that you don't have to care so much for the plant itself because the microbes will care for it. And so by creating a really great environment, you enable the plants to thrive. It's just kind of like spoiling a child, that if you spoil them, you just give them whatever they want, then when they have to go and make a living on their own, they don't understand quite how things work. And it's similar to a plant, that if you surround it by a bunch of nutrients without letting the natural system take place, then when the natural system does take place in about 20 or so days, when you're all your fertilizer gets non-water soluble, it will be on its own. And so it's better off to just leave it on its own in the beginning. And the plant will also be able to be much more nutritious because the root system is bigger. It's not just getting nutrients from this 4-foot zone, it's now getting it from thousands of miles, because with all the microorganisms in there, they're able to act as virtual root systems and bring nutrients to the plant. And so you're engaging this whole more biology. And I found this little image here. Someone Facebooked it to me. And I just thought it was kind of funny, because a lot of times people look at the plant and you can only see the top. And you look at the plant and you say, oh, this one's so healthy, this one's like doing great, why aren't these other ones doing so great? And then in natural farming, a lot of it is the growth is underground. And so if your plant doesn't look as good from the top, odds are that it's just like this carrot here, it's loaded down below. And that's really the strength, and that's, when you look at healthy things, they tend to be well-grounded. That in there. And to continue on theory of soil foundation, one of the great things is you have to weed less. That when you balance your microbes in your soil, they're able to change the energy levels so that you get less what you would consider weeds and more in harmony with what you're growing. So you just don't get as many weeds. And Elaine had this really cool picture where she took side by side just like dirt field, and one side had the fungal bacterial microorganisms balanced and the other side didn't. And this side was just really, really weedy, and the other side had maybe like 5 or 6 weeds in this whole field. And it was just amazing to me to see that just by changing the biology that little bit, it's really determined what would even grow in that soil. And so you can really change your definition of what weeds are when you begin to do soil foundation, because you won't be chasing your tail of cutting down the nasty weeds that grow on the Roundup, that when you round up them again, more nasty weeds come, that it just gets nastier and nastier. Versus this, where you're building your soil and the weeds that start popping up are like alfalfa or, I don't know, perennial peanut. You're like, where'd that come from? This is too good.
Must be all that soil foundation I did, right?
Okay. And I find that when you're looking at soil foundation or pretty much anything, it's easy to think of it as an energy field. If you want to get a kind of holistic picture to what you're doing, if you start to think of it as an energy field, you'll avoid kind of the myopic lenses of chemistry and biology and physics and whatever other science we have that you, well, I guess it's sort of physics, but it, looking at it as an energy field, it's like it's easy to tell, why are there weeds growing? Well, it's because there's low energy in this situation, and the only plants that harmonize with that lower energy are these weeds. And so until you add more energy via like taking, you know, soil foundation and changing the energy that way, or taking mulch and changing the energy that way, you're still going to remain with those weeds. And so if you look at it that way, it's really clear to see, well, is this action I'm going to take going to raise the energy field or lower the energy field? And that's a really good metric to make the determination of when you're working with soil of what you should be doing. If you just look at it like, oh, well, there's not enough nitrogen in this soil, you're going to be chasing your tail after nitrogen through the chemical lens. And so the more it's just kind of energy and resonance, it's really easy for I found to figure out how to cope with natural farming and soil foundation. And I always like to say this because it's all about humbling your ego. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. And that you're a knight. So you go and you say, so as opposed to being, you know, the Lord, you're the knight. And so the soil says to you, oh, you know, I need this. And you're like, yes, my liege. And you'll do it versus saying, you plants, you're going to grow here and you're going to do this. It's more you're sort of responding to the environment, but in a way that you're able to solve the problem and not over-dictate what you're trying to do. And you really let the microbes do the farming, and that's really kind of what this whole soil foundation, you know, why spend all your time building this bright microbial layer if then you're going to try to macro-manage it by throwing a bunch of inputs at it at just odd times. If you go with the, you know, what's flowing and then you just kind of pull up and solve the little problems, you'll do really well with that. So how's everyone doing? Good? Okay, cool. So I went through the recipe, I went through the method, I went through theory, right? Okay. Now we're on to the rationale for the components. And so, as you can see here, I'm going back again and I'm repeating myself here that I have all these components relisted here. That I'm going to go through each one and tell you why it goes into soil foundation. So we're going to go through a bunch here. There's 10 of them, I think. Again, I'm not going to count that fast. But this here is my little IMO bucket that I bring around that I can create a whole soil foundation with just this little bucket of goodies, which is always nice to show up and be able to like fertilize this whole room with just one 5-gallon bucket. Of course, if you need the water and other things, you got to get a little bit more, but these are the concentrated things. So I'm not going to talk about specifically how to make these recipes because I have to make another presentation like this for each one of these to get the full depth into them. But more what I'm going to do here is talk about them, you know, in a brief way and why you would use them. And IMO number 4 stands for Indigenous Microorganism Raised to the Level 4 Power. It's a cube. Super cute. And they provide the advanced workers. So the basic idea you can think of with IMO is that
there's some microbes that, pretend this is a little bit of soil or, you know, in land here, that there's microbes, and there are microbes on this table, by the way, even though it's not soil. So I take some of these microbes here, and I make IMO1, which is kind of like rearing them as you're collecting what's in the environment. It's like collecting the infants. Then you make an IMO2, which kind of selects them further and makes them through the adult stage. IMO2, yeah, it's like you're getting to an adult. IMO3 is like going to learn a bunch of stuff. And then IMO4 is like you've learned a bunch of stuff and then you were given like superpowers because you had all the right nutrients and minerals. And so it'd be kind of like taking a group of you guys from here and sending you off to another planet because you're removing them from the environment, and then you get trained by super smart aliens, and then you're brought back to Earth. And because you look like us, you've been gone for, you know, 200 years or a few generations. You look like us, we'll still accept you back in. You know, you're not all like crazy deformed looking where we're like, oh no, we'll kill these guys. But you look like us, so we accept you back in. We're friends with you. We can start talking about how good old times where our ancestors were friends together, so we have this great associative relationship. But you're also super, super smart, and you can build things, and like everyone else is walking around, and you're flying, and you're like, why don't you guys fly? And you're like, they didn't know how. But because this came back, he can teach the other guys that were there how to fly. Maybe not as good as that guy, but really pretty good. And so when you bring these microbes that have been cultured elsewhere in this like super pristine environment, you bring them back, they kind of supercharge everyone and motivate them. And they act as like these super leaders that really just get everything that's there and catalyze it and get it in gear and get it moving. And that's really why you use IMO4, and that's why you take it through the full process to get it to IMO4. Because at that stage, it's they're advanced workers that are they're familiar with the area and already adapted to it and just way better. And they go in and they assemble the nutrients that are there into a plant assimilative form, which assimilation is always a fun word to try to spell check because they don't do it very often, I guess, on Firefox or whatever. What that means is that nutrients are always there. They're in the soil. They just are. But you only want them to be water-soluble at a certain point, and that's when the plant needs them. Because if they're water-soluble any other time, that means they're washing away. And so what the microbes do is in a micro zone, they're able to say, oh, you need barium. And they make it liquid, and they send it across osmotically into the plant, and the plant has it. It's like, all right. It gives them sugar, and they're like, yes, we got sugar. So that's basically how that's working. And what you're doing is, again, on the energy field, the second point is always going to relate to the energy field, and you are in really, 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 really positively energizing the energy field when you add microorganisms. And they talk about two types of energy fields, negative and positive energy. Too much of either is, you know, is bad, but the difference between it is that positive energy is going clockwise and negative energy is going counterclockwise. And when you add a bunch of microorganisms to the ground, your electrical spin of your field starts heading more clockwise. So you're adding positive energy when you add IMOs in. Just that little bit of life and everything, they're able to stir it up, they're able to get it flowing in the right direction. And they're able to transform things that were otherwise stagnant. They now, with that change of energy field, they're able to get them into where they want them to be. Another great thing is that it virtually stretches your roots millions of miles, which millions may be an over-exaggeration. It may only be hundreds of thousands. But that's still way more than your plant was going to grow by itself. It's like if you go down into my banana patch or something, the entire thing is roots. It's not necessarily a plant, but it's just alive. It's roots. And it's it's because the microbes are feeding the plant as a virtual root system. These guys are great also because if you've ever read Paul Stamets' book, Mycelia Running, and you open it up, it's either on the third page, I don't know, right when you get into the book, it's maybe the first picture you see, is of microorganisms in the soil making a Velcro-like contraption so that when a nematode, which is a tiny little worm, tries to come through the soil to get to your plant, it gets stuck in that Velcro and it stops it. And so they're able to suppress larger things of life like nematodes and ciliates, which are kind of in large numbers can be detrimental to an environment. They're able to stop them and to basically tie them up just like Velcro and be like, hey, you guys are staying there, and then recover the system. So they naturally do that. And if you've ever heard of rat lung worm disease, it's caused by a nematode. And so as opposed to trying to get your vegetables off the ground to try to mitigate rat lung, I just putting more microorganisms in the ground and getting the beneficial microbes there is actually a better solution. The more you can get your soil to be healthy, beneficial microorganisms, the less type of nematodes or bad type of disease-causing microorganisms that you'll have. And like I said earlier, this IMO4 really helps to balance the fungal to bacterial ratio, which that ratio is a crucial element determining what will sprout here. Again, it's related back to this energy field. And that as that energy field grows or gets to a certain point, that this ratio will change. But by introducing IMO4, you start with a really good bacterial to fungal ratio in your soils. And so that helps, again, with weed suppression and other things. And the whole key to an immune system is resilience. And the best way to get resilience is to get diversity. So if one person can't handle, someone else can step up and carry the load for them. And the more diversity, the more people you have working together, the more robust your immune system will be. And IMO4 really helps to get the microorganism immune system just jump-started. So that's my reason for adding IMO4 to Soil Foundation. You wouldn't be doing much if you didn't add the IMO4, because you'd just be kind of feeding what's there, and these guys are the best to feed. So my second thing is on biochar, which is just fancy charcoal. And I always like to include this because I love biochar. And its role is it provides the housing and storage for the microbes, which is an essential component in there. Imagine they took 1,000 people and just put them out in a field. They wouldn't last very long. They have to build a shelter of some sort. And so same thing with these microorganisms, that when you put them out to your field, if you include little mini hotels and little, like, you know, restaurants and kiosks with them, they're going to be selling goods and services in no time. So the biochar really is a stimulus to kind of not only deliver the life, but also deliver the shelter for them and increase their capacity to do work. It really acts as a battery. Like I said, the second one's always going to have to do with an energy field. And it's the battery. More than anything, it's one of the more crucial things to do is to increase that battery. Because if you're always living on the edge of just in time, like, oh, I got this much right now and I can make it, versus if you have an extra storage of it, you say, well, I got this much and I'm making it, but then if anything goes wrong, I also got this much more. You're going to be that much more resilient again to any kind of change in your environment, or to reach homeostasis, you're going to be much better off. And so anytime you can raise that battery and get more energy into your system, which biochar is a huge energy stimulator, it's not going to charge it up, but it's going to say that if there was this much charge potential, we can store more now. So we're not always riding right on the edge of how much energy there is. It's going to be huge, and you don't need very much, like even a few little bits of charcoal go miles. But again, I gave the prescribed recipe in the recipe card. I think I started there. So this next point on the microbes storing toxins, I have this great concept that a diamond is the hardest structure known to man. And I think I may be true that, like, you can scientifically verify that. Just the way the electrons line up and stuff, it makes it in this great solid structure. And different types of carbon do very similar things. There are a bunch of carbon chains, and sometimes they turn into sort of diamond-type things. And when you have really good biochar, it enables the microbes to take a toxin and to put it into like a diamond structure. So if there was this element in the soil vibrating around, because all energy is always vibrating, and you're like, oh, well, we don't want, you know, that's too much energy here. We need to lower the energy in that spot. And so they'll take it and they can store it in a diamond, just like a maximum security prison that's really fun and entertaining and a positive image of that. And they put it in there and it stays there. And then later they can go back and unlock it and bring it back out. But when it was locked into that maximum security prison, now the plant didn't have to uptake it. Because if there was no carbon in the soil, that plant has no other choice. It got to get rid of that toxin somehow. So it'll put it into the plant and take it up. And then when you eat it, you get that toxin. And it's still not in its diamond prison. It's still bouncing around in you and causing all kinds of havoc and doing its thing. So when you can tie it up in the soil and get that energy field to stay there and get it to it's really a positive energy field, you're going to get less toxins in your food. And they do it all with the charcoal and different forms of carbon. But when you make biochar or a charcoal, it's much better than an organic type of carbon. It's just been transformed by heat. And, like, you know, a diamond's made by heat and pressure, right? And so when you add heat into wood and you burn it, you also change its molecular structure. You don't have to add a ton of pressure to make it actually a diamond. But when you add that heat, you change its structure. Then just a piece of wood falling, like a tree falling, also carbon, but it doesn't have that heat and pressure applied to it to make it that maximum security prison to do this. So biochar, forest burn, the natural process happens. It smolders at the bottom. That's how real good biochar is made. Smoldering is a big part of it. And so it's always this happens in nature. So I'm not just like trying to sell biochar, even though I'd like to sell biochar. And also one of my favorite things is that it eliminates the need for irrigation. That if you do it properly, you don't need to irrigate, because every night when when the temperature hits a certain level, the moisture in the air is unlocked and it comes out. And just enough, just like I was saying, the microbes die at the right rate to feed the plant. It's going to release just enough water out of the atmosphere that they're going to tie it up. And if you have the biochar, the microbes will take that excess moisture and store it in the biochar. And it acts as like a water reservoir that later when the plant's like, oh, I'm kind of thirsty, they can give it in as much as it needs, not where you come and dump 10 gallons more than it needed and kind of drowned it. It can get exactly, oh, I just wanted one cup of this. So refreshing. And because if someone tried to feed me that from over there, man, it wouldn't work, right? But if I had my own and I have my biochar, I got my own little cup here, you know, I got the right amount. So very similar idea here. Eliminates my need to go over there and get more sugarcane juice. And more than anything, carbon, good carbon, which is biochar, char, sort of carbon here, lets plants go to their full potential. If you've ever seen a picture of a side-by-side that Josiah's done a bunch where he got one test plot with biochar and one without, and you see the one with biochar, it's like 3-4 times the size, it looks way better, it's all healthy and good. It's not that that plant grew better, it's that the other one couldn't grow as good. it couldn't. What you're seeing is not a miracle. What you're seeing is its natural full expression of it reaching its potential because it doesn't have all these toxins in it because they're tied up in the soil. And the plant doesn't have to put these toxins in and then build some weird component around it to like make it a mutant. It's beautiful and it lives in this pure, clean environment. And it lets plants reach their full potential and their full nutrition and everything. And I'm sold. Okay, so that's why I included soil foundation, because it's that good. So I'm going to talk about some fermented plant juice here. You'll notice this first one is always provides, except for the last one didn't say provides, but this one provides the food to the microbes. And so in these simplistic terms, you can think of it as adding more food, which is, again, more energy to the system, which is going to increase this the potential there. But really, it has some other attributes, but if you just think of it as food, that's really why I'm adding it to my soil foundation. It raises the energy level. I guess what I was trying to get at with that point is that the higher energy level you have and the more food you have in a system, the more higher plant forms, which are typically the ones we want to eat, start to naturally occur. Because when they have food, then they can produce. And so by feeding your system, if you want to eat off it has to eat first. And this using this enables those higher plant forms to kind of eat. And it also has a bunch of hormones and enzymes in it, and I'm going to combine these two points into each other because it's kind of this complete fertilizer that hasn't been just chemically extracted from this spectrum. It's the whole deal in there. But it's only the first part of the whole deal, which is like the juiciest part. The way it's made is through an osmotic reaction where the juice of the comes across the cell wall. And so you're not getting all the crud that was in there. You're getting the essence of the plant through this fermented plant juice. And it really is close to mimicking nature of how, this is kind of how nature, like, if anything, fertilizes when fruit falls around a tree and it recycles and refeeds itself. This is a very similar process, a little bit more controlled of the fermentation so that you get the most optimal result. But this is a really good thing, and just using it alone increases the energy field enough that I've seen dramatic results by foliar feeding this. But when you add it to the soil solution, soil foundation, it's like when you're applying all those IMOs in, you're applying them with a packed lunch so they can eat and have a great time and find where they want to go. Then the next component I'll individualize is Oriental Herbal Nutrient, which is commonly known as OHN. We like acronyms. And this is a bucket of Olena, which is another thing that can be used for it. But this basically is the medicine to the system. If you're a wild man like me, you go camping without a first aid kit. But most people bring a first aid kit or at least a band-aid of some sort or duct tape, I don't know. But it's always a good idea if you go on a crazy adventure to bring some medicine with you. I actually travel with OHN in my bag always. Like, it's good if I ever feel sick or anything, I have it with me. And from what I can discern, I mean, this, I'm just scratching the surface of this stuff. It's really magical stuff some of the oldest medicine in Chinese healing herbs and Oriental healing herbs that are like from ancient wisdom. So there's like tomes and tomes on this. But in the most brief way, what I can say it does for the soil foundation is it stimulates aerobic microbes and it suppresses anaerobic microbes. And that being its biggest factor, that you're trying again to increase the aerobic layer where your roots can get oxygen. So the more aerobic microbes you have in that zone, the happier and healthier that soil is going to be. And sometimes when you're down, you need to suppress a little bit of anaerobic microbes. They're kind of always present, and they're there for good reason, and you don't want to kill them all. Even thinking of killing them is kind of a weird idea. You don't want to displace them all. But this helps. And also a lot of the things in there, like the ginger and the cinnamon, they're invigorating. And it brings this rapidity to the system that, I can't think of any good example that's worth saying here, but it really stimulates the system. It kind of gets, like ginger gets your heart beating a little faster in a good way, gets a little bit more blood flowing through you. And that's the same thing that in the beginning when you're doing this soil foundation, you kind of want to stimulate and boost the system a little bit. And the OHN really helps to do this. So not only as a medicine, but also as a stimulator. And kind of just when you put it in, it's like, okay, guys, go. Like, do your thing. That's good stuff. So this is probably my favorite ingredient. Oh, no, biochar is, sorry. This is my second favorite ingredient. I kind of like the smell. That's really what it is, I think. Addicted. But this, the fish amino acid provides the building material. So, and this is sort of similar to the fermented plant juice, which provided the food, and to a certain extent that also provides building material, and to a certain extent this also provides food. But I like to think of this more as the building material. That, okay, they brought a bunch of us here, and now they give us a bunch of lumber and nails and skill saws and instructions, and we can build a lot with this. And it's made up of amino acids that have been fermented, and the longer they ferment, the simpler they become, which the simpler they become, the easier they are to reassemble into more complex things. And amino acids are the building block of life. That's what DNA is. It's a bunch of amino acids. That's what your RNA transforms and makes weird little proteins that go around, which proteins are from amino acids. And this is how a cell operates. It makes these little automatons out of amino acids. And its nitrogenous forms are very close to how they are in nature. And what I mean by that is like in plant available forms in nature. That there's nitrogen all around us, obviously. There's like 76% of it in the air. It's pushing against you at 18 pounds per square inch. But we're not using that nitrogen. But this nitrogen here can be used that way. So if you ate this, you'd start making DNA versus I'm not really making that much DNA out of the air around me that I'm aware of. And fish amino acids, probably the most potent activator of life I've seen. If you go spread some of this around, and not necessarily life of a good sort, but life will appear, like, out of nowhere. Like, flies will come out of the air, all kinds of stuff. It's really potent. Life loves this stuff. It's like a magnet for life. So, when we're building soil foundation, that's what we want to do, is we rapidly want our microbes to find their home in the soil. And so by giving them a lot of fish amino acid, they're able to quickly go through a few generations, homogenize, find out what they want. And we're not over-nitrogening them where they kind of would get sick. All right, so I know this is a long list. How's everyone doing? All right, blank stares. All right, I'm going with it then. So, lactic acid bacteria. This is again one of my favorite ingredients. and it again provides emergency workers and a welcoming crew. And I want to slow that word down a little bit and say it again. So emergence C. So when things are emerging, like I like to think of emergency as a new emergence, it's a new face of things. It's not something to panic about. It's just like something new is coming. Let's be ready for it. And so in this emergency, as they go in, they're really able to help people in this new transition, that as you're going from soil that you've just removed the grass and now you're trying to build soil foundation, when you add the lactobacillus, lactic acid bacteria is also what they're called, in there, they're cool. They're already like, they're like, oh, we got this, no problem. Because they can live in such a wide variety of climates that one third of the bacteria on your skin right now is lactic acid bacteria. They're omnipresent. They're in the air. You're breathing them in. They're in space. And because they're everywhere, and they're everywhere for a reason, it's because they're kind of maintaining this homeostasis, that they're able to really help and welcome things and get it ready for the life that's like supposed to be there, I guess, or that you're trying to encourage. Get it ready. Their main thing that makes them really powerful is that they can go aerobic or anaerobic, that they'll operate under both conditions. As far as I can tell, they prefer the aerobic condition, so they try to return the area to aerobicity as fast as possible. But that means if I'm watering them into the ground and they go down beyond where that oxygenated water is, they're not going to die. They're more just going to start building air ducts and canals and waterways and electrical lines and fungal networks so that they can bring air there. And they're going to increase that aerobic layer. And the more sensitive microbes then move in afterwards. And they really, this one should have been the second point because that has to do with the energy field. But it helps to restore that homeostasis, so that if there's any point on the thing that's like high energy or lower energy, they'll kind of bring that to a homeostatic point where they can balance this energy field to be able to have optimal life. And lactobacillus, like I said, they're all over you. They happen to be friendly with majority of other bacteria and kind of work just, you know, not really mind them one way or the other, just kind of do their own thing. But if you over-apply them in situations, they can dominate. And then when they do dominate, then they'll leave quickly, and then they'll leave kind of a void in their absence. And so you want to be careful on over-applying lactic acid. You'd rather get them to be the welcoming crew, prepare the thing, and then get an indigenous microbe, so an IMO, in that space. So moving on those guys, and that's why they're in there. They really help to prep that solution. This is the brown rice vinegar, which is the makgeolli, which is what Sherry's going to be making on the 23rd at 10 o'clock. And brown rice vinegar is the second part of makgeolli, right? I think you let it turn to vinegar.
Yeah.
Because the original makgeolli is like it's an alcoholic drink, right? But then if you... And then if you continue to ferment it in a certain manner, you'll get brown rice vinegar. And brown rice vinegar has this great... the reason it's in there is to unlock stuck nutrients. So anything that's kind of like hanging out there that's not flowing well, that's, you know, like just like... crud in your pipes. If you clean the crud out, things flush better. That's kind of the principle of why I add the brown rice vinegar. And the way it does that is it flips the energy field from being acidic, which is typically a negative counterclockwise spin, to being an alkaline positive clockwise spin as it's metabolized, which is a vital, vital, vital thing, because I can take an acidic thing and I can add a base into it and I can make it neutral, right? But that's not changing it in the way that this is, because this metabolization has a key that has biology included into it. So it's not that I'm just mixing two chemicals together and creating a neutral or changing the pH some way. I'm actually, as it's metabolized, the organism itself is releasing these things. So it's happening at the very small microcellular level. And that's where a majority of your nutrients get stuck, if they're actually like getting an enema or something. Like, never done it, but I bet a bunch of stuff would come out, you know? And that flip, once you got things moving, it really frees it up for change. So now they can accept, now that you're changing your environment, it the old can be used properly because it's free now, they're no longer stuck. And the new things can now get stuck where the old things were stuck, but now because they're new, they're not as stuck or it's not as bad. Or some way of rationalizing that. And it's a big stimulus. So that's why it's used. It's in addition to the OA channel kind of stimulating the environment, this BRB also kind of stimulates and provides vigor. Alright, so I want to talk about my favorite ingredient. This one is ocean water. I like this one because it's free. In Hawaii, it's one of our more abundant resources. And it's the reason you would use it in the soil foundation is it provides trace nutrients that you don't have in the soil. Hawaii being a brand new island, our rock, if you're just getting lava rock that's being eroded, it's missing a few components. It's primarily basalt, and then it's changing into a bunch of different chemical transformations. But you're missing some things like heavier elements. But all those heavier elements for millions of years have been washing off the land and into the ocean. And then if you go collect it from where it's kind of being stirred up and there's a lot of oxygen in there, you're getting a lot of interesting biology from the ocean. You're also getting a bunch of trace nutrients that are in these micro levels that really only the ocean can deliver. And so when you bring those onto the land, back onto the land, it kind of renews the land. It's as if it's brand new, like in a good way, like a complete rich of everything but brand new to grow on land. It also sort of heals with a yin-yang balance, because I like to think of yin and yang, and the ocean being wet and the ground being dry. That when you kind of merge those two things, you kind of create this synthesis, which also helps to establish new transformations and better things. And in the energy field, it brings components that otherwise wouldn't materialize. And it really helps if your land has been damaged by uses of pesticides or heavy, like arsenics and things from cane. They used a lot back in the day. It really helps to kind of mitigate that oversaturation and restore homeostasis. So that's why it's used. And also, if you notice, there's 20 ounces of it in there. When you use the ocean water at that dilution ratio, you're not over-salting the land. When you go to get an IV, it's saline solution. They don't put straight water into you, they put saline. And just like this, when you take salt water and you put it onto land at these light dilutions, it's a little bit saline, but it's the same salinity as the plant. And so you're not over-salting it. It's actually able to take it up as is, and the salt, sodium, whatever it is, could probably be beneficial in most cases. This is my favorite ingredient. I took this picture in like a while ago, but anyone recognize this? Rainbow Falls, right? Yeah. That was on a good day. But when I think of oxygenated water, this is what I think of. I don't think of like some little, bubbler in a tank or something. No, I think of this. And if you went and gathered that water there, I bet you it's like probably 8%, maybe 10% oxygen right there. That much, because it's gone over a few falls and it's really turbulent there. So you have a lot of oxygen in there. Typically, down here, these are the common oxygen contents of different types of water. So if you get groundwater or water that's been in your catchment tank for a while, it has all of 0% of oxygen in it, because just the way water works, it releases the oxygen pretty quickly. Rainwater that's freshly fallen, you have about 8% oxygen in there. And then there's ways to repeatedly drop water or with a bubbler, and you can get water theoretically up to 16%, which is how much there is in this air out here. If you got more than that, it would like really dissipate really quickly. The cool thing about oxygenated water is it has a higher energy state than normal water. So again, I'm talking about energy fields and interesting things like that, which how this works. Typically, you know, oxygen looks like a Mickey Mouse. It's, you know, one with then the two oxygens on it, H2O. Yeah. And when you have normal water, they're all miscombobled, like a bunch of Mickey Mouse heads all, you know, in there, however they are. But when you start to oxygenate water, you add a charge to it, and typically it's done by spinning. And a lot of that's how a lot of energy in the universe can be transmitted, is through spinning. And when you stir water or you get it spinning, what happens is these molecules, which were any old shape, they all start to line up and they all start to face each other. And when that alignment happens, you get where the oxygens and the hydrogen and all that is bonded, and it becomes almost like a solid, which again has a higher energy state than water or than a liquid. You have liquid, solid, gas. I don't know how that goes. But anyway, you have a higher energy state, which this thing can hold more energy. Then when it can hold more energy, you're able to add the nutrients into it better. And that you'll get this thing, which is called a colloid, which means that your particulate size is extremely small. That it's almost like you have a solution, which means something dissolved in something else, but you don't have a solution because they're insoluble, things we're working with, but they're held in this water suspension, in a colloid suspension, which the molecules are so small that it makes it really easy for the microbes to get the minerals or the nutrients out of the oxygenated water in the liquid. Helps it go through the cell wall better because it's smaller. It helps all kinds of great things like that. And also, your nutrients won't just disappear. They'll kind of stay there for a while when they're in this suspension. Oxygenated water, if you're in a rocky area, is the best at breaking down rocks. If you ever go to the Wailuku River, go look where there's a waterfall, and you'll see there's a cavern either underneath or behind it in that area. It's because oxygenated water is falling, getting more oxygenated, and blown up against these cliff walls, and it just eats away Hawaiian basalt. Oxygenated water, really fast. So the more you can use oxygenated water, you're not only going to get oxygen straight to your plant roots, which are like lungs, but you're also going to start to break down rock minerals, which I'm a big fan of rock minerals and rock music. Okay, so we made it through all those individual components. I hope everyone